This week's show is supported by Signature Studio. And I use this myself. If you ever get an email from me, that email signature, it's all Signature Studio. Think about how many emails you send every single day. Each of them an opportunity to compound an impression, tell your story, and position yourself in the minds of the people who matter most. Most people waste this opportunity with a name, maybe a phone number. Signature Studio lets you build an email signature that works for you, featuring live testimonials, your latest podcast episode, a booking link with Calendly, or a rotating banner that stays fresh long after you hit send. It takes minutes to set up, works with Gmail, Outlook, and Apple Mail, and you need no design skills. Your inbox is the most under-leveraged channel in your business. Signature Studio fixes that. Start building for free today at signaturestudio.me.
Welcome to Building Your Leader Brand. Today on the show, Bob is speaking with Rick Ivanovich.
We should know our strengths, we should know our weaknesses, and if we want to go further ahead, double down, triple down, quadruple down on your strengths. Because why? You like them, you're good at them, so it's easier to be even better at them, and there's no resistance from you to keep practicing what you're good at, okay? But we do also need to be aware of our weaknesses, because sometimes it might be a weakness that really derails us.
Welcome back to Building Your Leader Brand. My name's Bob Gentle, and every week I spend time with incredible people who share their secrets to building, marketing, and monetizing their expertise and the mindset you need for your business and career to grow and thrive. You can download the Personal Brand Business Roadmap at amplifyme.agency/roadmap. It's everything you need to start, scale, or fix your expert business. If you're new to the show, then while you still have that device in your hand, do me a big favor and hit subscribe or follow or whatever it is. That way, you won't miss a single thing. So this week, I am delighted to welcome Rick Ivanovich to the show. Rick is the author of a book, Business as Unusual, How to Thrive in the New Renaissance. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Bob. I'd like to share a core belief that I hold very dear. And that is, we all have the potential to be architects of change. In this world that we all live in, which is really defined by constant transformation, our task isn't just to keep up, it isn't just to keep our head above the water, it's to try and shape the path forward. Every day, our actions, whether they are big or small, they shape our future. And as we discuss stuff today, Bob, I want everybody listening to remember this. You are your brand. Every single decision you make is part of the unique story that you're crafting for yourself. How you react, how you adapt, and how you innovate will define your story and your legacy. So as we dive into our conversation today, let's not just think about adapting to change, but how we can define it, as we're not just participants, we're catalysts in this ever-changing business as unusual world. So let's get started, Bob.
So I think you get the prize for the best introduction. Change is inevitable. I think especially these days in the political turmoil, post-COVID world, everything is different. And I think a lot of people are, and I noticed this across my clients, across my audience, everybody's kind of dancing on hot coals at the moment, waiting for things to change, waiting for things to go back to the way they were. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. It's probably not going to happen. That's just not the world we're in anymore. And there are only two routes through this. There is struggle, or there is take control and thrive. I was mentioning to you before we started recording, I get pitched 5 or 6 times every day for people to come on the podcast. And the success rate is about 1%, because I go out and very actively curate my guests. And you came in, I think it was through a podcast agency, and they never get guests on the show. But you really stood out because your book has me mesmerized. I haven't read it yet, but I have it ordered. And I'd like you to maybe talk about the book a little bit, how it came about, what the premise is. And you have some really fun metaphors in there that I think are extremely useful. So maybe for the listener meeting you for the first time, who is Rick? What do you do? And then let's maybe go in and talk about your book a little bit.
Okay. So who am I? That's a good question. Be here all day. Well, I'm a Brit, as you can tell by the accent. I am an accountant by training, by profession. I'm a serial entrepreneur, and the main company that I run is, we sell accounting solutions, or financial ERP, if you want to put a more sexy word to it. And we do that all around the world. I think we've done it in about 80 different countries so far. And we do it out of the Far East, because I've spent the last 35 years based in Vietnam. It was only last year that I relocated to much, much quieter Switzerland. And so that's one of the things I do. Other company I have a company that really focuses on people. It's all about psychometric assessments. And that's another thing I do. And I also have a small coffee chain, as one does, I suppose. Some years ago, I think it's about 7 or 8 now, I accidentally fell into coaching and mentoring. And I've been pivoting more and more and more towards that over the years. And so it's not just running this technology company, it's also coaching and mentoring and growing people. And I guess it's all the same thing, because if you have employees, that's what you're supposed to be doing with them, right? Growing them and mentoring and coaching them. So that's who I am. Let's talk a little bit about the book. During COVID, I was in Vietnam, and the lockdowns there were pretty tough, in that there was a period we couldn't even step out of our apartment. You needed a permit to do that. So, you know, you might have a permit to go to the supermarket once a week. So what are you supposed to do if you are stuck at home? Well, for me, I wrote a book. And, you know, why this strange sounding name? Well, during that period, getting onto a Zoom call or something and chatting with the business leaders and the business networks that I was involved in. And I kept hearing some people saying, when this is over and we get back to normal. And that really wound me up. I thought, come on, wake up. There's no going back to normal. There's no business as usual. It's all business as unusual. Okay. And that really helped put shape to the book. Everything is unusual. And we saw that because the lockdowns were open and closed, and we could go to the office and not go to the office. And it was chaos for 2 years. And country border was closed. Like, for example, my wife had been medevaced in the March. Then they locked down the country. It took me 9 months to get her back. And I knew of lots of other people that I knew who actually had gone on a business trip, and then the country started locking down and they got stuck in transit somewhere. And it took them literally months to get back. Okay. You know, overland or something. Crazy story. Anyway, so what's the book really about? I mean, you mentioned before that people were waiting. All right. And I guess this is what the book is a little bit about, addressing that problem. Because with the pandemic, it moved the goalposts. There's no playbook to follow. You know, pre-pandemic, we got up, we did that long commute, we went to our office building, we sat down in our little cube, and we jumped on whatever hamster wheel we did as a job, you know, because it pays the mortgage, right? And that's life. And we bought into that. Many of us did for years. And then pandemic comes along, and not only do they throw away our cube, they threw away the office, and we're told to stay at home. Okay. The fortunate ones were told to stay at home. The unfortunate ones, they threw the job away as well. and we were forced to work from a home environment, which was a bit weird. Some people hated it. Some people loved it. And then pandemic sort of became a bit over, and we said, maybe come back to the office one day or 2 days or many days, or don't come back, or you must come back. Depending who you're working for, it was a little bit confusing. But for some people, having spent so much time away from work and realizing that, maybe we actually quite like working from home, they don't want to go back. Others who said, like, okay, I've come back. What is the point? What is the point to what I am doing here? I don't like it. Others disliked how organizations were treating them. And I think all of this triggered the great reshuffle, the great resignation, the great, call it whatever you want. People basically voting with their feet. Something wasn't right with the situation they were in. And it's a unique thing. So I'd say they were out of balance. Okay. Something in their life wasn't quite right. And they decided to make a change in search of satisfaction, something better. And some of them are still in search. Okay. So what's the main metaphor in the book? The main metaphor in the book is a castle. Now, I think we can all imagine what a castle looks like. It's got walls and towers and things like that. In the book, we have seven buildings, and each building represents an aspect of our lives. And when I say we need to be an architect of change, but I also mean you need to be an architect of your own castle. Because if you're building your own castle and you're laying those bricks every single day, you have to decide where you're going to lay the brick. Are you going to put it on this wall, on this building, that building? And, you know, how big do you want your castle to be? What shape do you want it? What color do you want it to be? I mean, it's your castle. You can do whatever you want. And so these different elements, just like building a castle, when I say balance, we're trying to keep them all in balance. Because if, again, imagine your castle, what does it look like? And when you imagine it, it needs to look in a certain way to look right, to be in balance.
I think one of the things with the castle is there is an optimum structure.
There is, but it's personal. You know, if you want, like in the book, in the keep their four towers, well, for some people, that's four towers the same size and they're all square. For another person, like, well, why are they square and why are they the same size? Why isn't one 10 times the size of the other one? It's a very personal thing. Okay. So when I'm talking about balance, it's quite a hard thing for an individual to define, but I can guarantee we all know when we're not in balance. We all know when we're out of balance. Something is not right. We don't feel right. Okay. And so what we're really in search for is we're in search of that balance. And the book talks about all the buildings and what they mean, and it gives all sorts of ideas of how to get it right, how to find that balance. And the purpose of all this is because I feel that people are out of balance, which really means they're not very happy, and they don't know what playbook to follow. Here's a new one.
I think what I liked about it is it's almost, or perhaps is, a metaphor on the more traditional wheel of life that I've seen from time to time. But it's actually much more useful because I look at something like the wheel of life, and if people aren't familiar with the wheel of life, you can go and Google it. You can probably speak to what it is far more productively than I can, because I'm not a certified coach. But it's difficult to relate to for a lot of people, particularly creative people. But it's really important because balance in our lives, like you said, it means different things to different people. And if you're not operating out of a place where you feel happy, it's going to be very difficult to get motivated. And as I'm sure you can speak to, the success that you've achieved in your life, if you hadn't been happy in your work, it would have been very unlikely to happen.
I'm going to pick up on the Wheel of Life. You said you haven't read the book, or you must have read it because it's in the book. The Wheel of Life helped also trigger the metaphor of the castle that I've used. Yes, in coaching, we're taught about the Wheel of Life. And to explain it, we all know what a wheel looks like. And in the Wheel of Life, there are different elements of life. And you sort of scale them between zero, which is right in the middle of the hub of the wheel, all the way to 10. However, wheels are supposed to be round. And whenever I scored myself, I get a wonky wheel. And I go like, great, how's this supposed to help? Does it mean I'm wonky? And when I look at these scales, I said, I'm sorry, I don't want to be a 10 on this scale. This thing is not important to me. Okay. So although there's nothing wrong with the concept of the Wheel of Life, to me personally, it didn't quite gel because I'm happy with that wonky shape because that's where I want to be. But the Wheel of Life is sort of implying that it's wrong and I need to, you know, have even everywhere.
It's not very humane.
No. And so I think my castle is better. Okay, I'm biased. Because it can be any damn shape you want.
I agree. I think it's a wonderful metaphor because storytelling is really important. And with this metaphor, it's much easier to understand our lives as a creative process, not as trying to fit in with the formula. Like you identified, the Wheel of Life, if your circle isn't round, there's something wrong. And that's just not realistic. Mm-hmm. So one thing I would like to speak about a little bit is that there's a book I've read by a guy called Roger J. Hamilton. Thankfully, I remembered it, because usually when I try and remember the name of that book, or the author rather, it's just disappeared. So Roger J. Hamilton wrote a book called The Millionaire Master Plan. I even remember the name of the book. And in that book, he talks about how it's very unusual that your first business is the one that builds wealth. And statistically, it's actually very unlikely that your first business is going to build wealth, but it's a great training ground. That may or may not be true, but it parallels another phenomena that I see a lot, and I experience it in myself, which is it's almost like we have an inbuilt thermostat for success. That when we reach a certain level, the thermostat kicks in and it kind of holds us there psychologically. It's almost a metaphysical thing. I don't really understand it. Some people manage to reset that thermostat and they can move beyond that. They all experience, I think, that thermostat. And as an accountant, you probably see this quite a lot. And I'm interested in your take as an accountant and as a coach. What is it, or what can people do to reset that thermostat? Because I think it's partly mindset, but it's partly something else.
That's a great question. I think there are two aspects to it. We all have a certain set of skill sets, okay? Call them hard or soft or both. I know for me, I've mentioned I'm a serial entrepreneur. I like starting things up. I really, really like doing that. It's the shiny, bright object. I tend to be a leader. Oh, there's a new device. I'll get that. And, you know, even though it's a terrible idea, I do like those carrots. Once I've started something up, the startup phase needs one set of skills. And then once it's sort of got somewhere, the sort of thrill of it goes away. And then I look for another shiny, bright object. Okay, that's me, but I see that in an awful lot of people. Okay? There are other people who aren't very good at starting things up, but they're very good if something started up and is pretty much going on and is sort of stalling. They're very, very good into going to those type of organizations and take it up to another level. Okay? So I'm more of that scrappy entrepreneur who'll, you know, bootstrap things and take on everything and just do stuff and just get it done. Not so good when, okay, it's a much larger organization and you're trying to take it further. I can do it. It just doesn't turn me on so much. You could say there's a skill set problem there. because it's dealing with people. Maybe it's being more diplomatic and cooperative and things like that, rather than saying that crazy entrepreneur who's a note, they're just going to do it. Get out of their way, because if you're not moving fast enough, you're going to get run over. I'm a little bit like that, although it's taken me, since I've done the coaching, pretty much a decade and a lot of work on me, that I can do both now. But it was a difficult transition. The other thing is also an internal thing, is these are maybe limits that we put on ourselves. Maybe it's a lack of belief in ourselves. Hey, you went from nothing and you got to this, and that's already really good. And you need to take it to that. So I think it's sort of picking up from what you were saying, some people have the ability to reset. And I think what's linked to is that when we look at ourselves and think of what we're capable with, we've subconsciously set a limit to what we're capable of. And once we hit it, then we think we're there and we're going into scary territory to go beyond there, because we're already hitting our limit. So this reset that you talk about is talk about raising that bar. And that can also be achieved, I believe, with coaching or mentoring, because having other people believe in you, okay, have other people help uncover maybe some of the fears that you have or why you are limiting yourself. If you can see those, if you can address those, maybe you can also raise your level.
I think as you were speaking, I was also coming to the conclusion that coaching can allow you to see doors psychologically and practically that you didn't realize were there. If somebody's spent a lot of time in this environment, they know where the doors are, they know how to open them. Having a companion on that journey is probably very productive. It's so obvious when you describe it like that. But if we were in sports and people were hitting their peak and they can't move on, they would immediately think coaching. If a team isn't performing and the coach isn't getting results, they'll probably change the coach. But absolutely, I think you can self-coach or work with one coach to get to a certain point. But sometimes that baton has to be handed to somebody else for the next part of the journey. So I really like that. It's a really good way of looking at things.
To pick up on that point there, it's on the self-coach. There's nothing wrong with self-coaching, except what I believe self-coaching cannot do. It's really not very good at helping you see your own blind spots.
Yeah, the mirror.
Only other people can see that.
One other thing that you alluded to, without perhaps alluding to it, but I think it really does come out of the conversation, is strengths and weaknesses. And when we have strengths and weaknesses, we have two options. We can either really power into our weaknesses and try and be better. And I think we should, to an extent, do that. But there's also the strengths side of things, that if we actually understand what our strengths genuinely are, they're sometimes a better investment. And as we're growing into our business, building our business around our strengths might mean that we have the same business as somebody else, but we take it a different direction because of our strengths. And as somebody who spends time in psychometric testing and through coaching, probably tests of lots of different kinds for understanding our strengths and weaknesses, I'd really love your perspective on that.
I think I recall in the past that there used to be a mantra that, you've got to know yourself, identify your strengths and weaknesses, and work on those weaknesses. I don't know where I was taught that, but I remember that. And the problem with that is some of our weaknesses, they're usually some of the things that we are really not very good at, so they don't come to us naturally. And they're blooming hard to improve. So for example, I've never been good at sport. I have terrible hand to eye to foot, ball coordination. So if you're playing tennis, it's like, what am I doing? Trying to swat a fly or something, And I've had lots of tennis lessons. I've spent hours and hours and hours on a tennis court, and you know, I'm still fly swatting. You know, that ain't going to change very much. Whereas other things, I'm very good at. I am a numbers person, and I like numbers. Okay, that's why I'm an accountant. I like Excel spreadsheets and that kind of stuff. I can be lost for hours in my world of numbers and creating spreadsheets. I like it. Okay. And I'm pretty damn good at it. Just as I am, I'm good at systems as well. I like that kind of stuff. So I believe that we should know our strengths. We should know our weaknesses. And if we want to go further ahead, double down, triple down, quadruple down on your strengths. Because why? You like them. You're good at them. So it's easier to be even better at them. And there's no resistance from you to keep practicing what you're good at. Okay. But we do also need to be aware of our weaknesses, because sometimes it might be a weakness that really derails us. So despite you having these great strengths, there's this one weakness or some other weaknesses that really, really trip you up. And we have to address that and find a solution to it. So I'll give you an example again. I'm an accountant. I understand numbers. What does that mean? Okay, I'm actually a super introvert and I'm not that comfortable around people. And when I started my company, which is my first company 31 years ago, it was one man and a dog. But I didn't even have a dog. It was just me. And then I hired one person, another person, another person, another person, another person. And when I got to about 20, 30 people, I realized that apart from a hell of a lot of stuff that I had no clue about, because all I knew about was numbers, I realized I didn't really understand people. I thought, how am I going to scale to 100 people, 200 people, if I don't understand people? Luckily, I came across psychometrics, which I reframed out. Oh, great, a mathematical formula to people. I understand that. I really understand that. It's maths. So I really got heavily into psychometrics, and that's another story. Yeah, I co-founded a company and we came up with an even better mousetrap. But, you know, there's an example of I knew my weakness, and I found a solution to it. Did I get better with people? No, I just found another way of looking at them. Like, here's the instruction manual to people you're about to hire or interview. It was a bit of a cheat. I think that's a bit of a smart way around it. As I said, I am a super introvert. I've realized that, you know, hey, if you're an entrepreneur, you're the head of the company, you can't be one necessarily. You've got to go out and stand on that horrible stage and don't shake and speak. That's taken a lot of work. That's taken an awful lot of work.
And I think there's a lot of people listening who are probably in a place where they're avoiding that kind of activity. I see this quite a lot, that I don't know what it is. I'm going to be really mean here, and I'm going to say I see two camps. I see great people who have deep humility and they come to their business from a place of service, and they're quite happy to step into the light, almost like an act of sacrifice. I need to do this for the bigger picture. But then there are equally competent people who actively shy away from being visible, almost because they're scared of, they've spent so much time building this competence that there's a fear of looking foolish. It's almost like going back to primary school again, that I'm going to be the new kid on block, and they avoid it. And I'm pretty sure you can identify with both of those.
Yeah, I mean, I'll take the latter one. I mean, I think the latter one, the reframing of that is we need to be authentic. And what does that mean? It really means is we're humans. We make mistakes. We screw up. We don't know all the answers. We can get it completely wrong. And yeah, we can be that clueless kid in the schoolyard. And there's nothing wrong with that. And the more that we embrace that, the more our confidence grows. Because if that's a fear, and you start embracing it, it's no longer a fear. It's a bit like the fear of failure. Okay, if we're afraid of failing, you can't be innovative because it means you stop tinkering, you stop trying. Now, the other one, you know, CEO. In Vietnam, we say the CEO is not the chief executive officer. We say it's the chief entertainment officer. So yeah, we're expecting the CEO get up on the stage, make a fool of themselves, be human, be silly. It's entertaining. Yeah, I know they're the big boss and they're brilliant or whatever they are, but yeah, they're human just like everyone else in the company. And we can be silly and play silly games and do silly stuff as well. Or let's take something else. The world seems to like Lego. You know, Lego, you say it's for kids. No, it's not. You know, it's now a very, very common practice to use Lego to help with collaboration, communication, and all sorts of things. You can get certified on how to play with Lego professionally. So, hey, be silly.
I love that idea of the chief entertainment officer. I haven't heard that before. And I think it does kind of speak to my point that sometimes it's actually the most confident, charismatic people in business that are the least confident. We think it's going to be the introverts that are going to be the people who are worried about showing up, particularly online. But actually, I find more often it's the traditionally very confident in person are sometimes the shyest about the online space and standing up on stages and things like that, which is fascinating for me.
Yeah, it is. Before we started the podcast, we were just chatting away. You were asking me how often I had done podcasts. And I talked a little bit about our company podcast, where I think we've done about 24 of them. And I tend to invite business leaders in Vietnam because we record it in our studios in our office in Vietnam. And out of the 24 people I've interviewed, I worked out that only 3 of them had ever done a podcast before. One of them, who said he had only done one, is the head of a very, very large very large professional services organization. I won't name who they are. He's got an OBE. No, he's a KBE, I think. Highly respective, always up on stage, has only ever been interviewed once. And he's even more of an introvert than I am. So the other thing I worked out, that out of these 24 people, 90% of them were introverts. Every single one of them was a business leader. Every single one of them I have seen on the TV or, you know, in the newspaper or on a public stage. And every single one of them is an introvert. And I was blown away.
I think one of the things I love about the online space is I think people rise to leadership positions, particularly in large organizations, by and large, despite what we might hear in the media, through merit and quality typically does rise to the top. And once you start focusing on the personal brand side of things, the same holds true, that the world kind of rises up to meet you a little bit. So if anybody at home thinking, oh, I don't know about this personal brand business, this leadership brand business, because I'm worried about failure. If you've been successful so far, you're likely to see this as an amplifier. And the law of unintended consequences tends to work in your favor. I think you probably would echo that, I imagine.
The personal brand thing is very, very important. I was very, very fortunate to be in a conference, and one of the speakers was an expert on personal branding, and she spent an hour session or a couple of 2 1-hour sessions, and it really spelt out enough and gave us enough step-by-step things of what to do that really helped make me look further at how important the brand is. Now, in the opening, as I said, every single thing that we do, every single choice that we make, doesn't matter if it's big or small, it actually shapes our brand. Because guess what? If you are a leader in your organization, everybody's looking at you and they're looking at what you're doing. So whether you do something or don't do something, they're looking, and I'm sorry, they're judging. They're judging you. All right. They're forming their perception of you. And again, this is where psychometrics come in, especially say 360 surveys, because, you know, when you look at a 360 survey, its value is telling you what other people think of you, what they see. As I said, you can't see your own blind spots. And that's why they are so valuable, because it's a bit like, you know, again, let's go back to school games, you know, and it probably happened to some listeners. I think it happened to me at least once during school, that you're walking around and somebody stuck something to your back, you know, some silly comment or whatever. It's like having a target on your back and you're walking around and people are sniggering, laughing, or whatever they are doing. Okay. And you can't see it. All right. So a 360 is like that. Other people get to comment of you and they're, hey, you got this thing on your back. You got a target. You got whatever is right or wrong about you. And it's a two-way street, because when I talk blind spots aren't necessarily negative things. Because they'll say, hey, they might point out something about your communication, and they say, you know, you are absolutely fantastic. You know, I've really explained things so clearly to me. I love having conversations with you. And you go, okay, all right. Makes you sort of walk on water, right? But there might be something else that they're not so, you know, they'll point out that you're not so good at, that you need improvement in. So the blind spots are, uncovering the blind spots, I think, are absolutely critical. And that's the reason why you really, really do need a coach or someone who can help point them out.
I think that's great advice. Let's jump into the three amplifiers. So this is the part of the show where I invite Rick, our magical guest, to share three things people can go and do to help move themselves forward. So a book, a mental model, a favorite podcast, doesn't matter. What are three levers people can go and pull to see some change in their life or their business? So Rick, what's amplifier number one?
Okay, so books. I'm a massive book reader. I devour them. I have to be completely biased and I say, you must read this book, Business as Unusual. Okay, I am the author. That is slightly biased. We did talk about it. If you don't speak English and you prefer Vietnamese, read this book, which is the same thing in Vietnamese.
Well done.
Okay, so that's that quick plug. But let's talk about another real book. I think this book is one of the books that I talk about in my book. It's that good. And I've actually made it. And if there's anybody from TRG, my company, listening, I want to remind you, it's a compulsory read. It's called The Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. It's absolutely awesome. Okay. Maybe even better than my book, but it's absolutely awesome. Okay. And it's 7-step principles. Okay. It's become a bit of my philosophy of life. And I was just laughing when I pulled it off the shelf, because there's a bookmark in it. Okay. And oh, it's from my son. I don't know how old this is, but looking at the writing, it's probably at least 15, more than 15 years old.
So for the listener, it's a very enjoyable child's drawing.
Yes, it is. It brings tears to my eyes. But it's absolutely an amazing book. Absolutely an amazing book. All right, what else can you do? The other thing that you can do is you can subscribe to my newsletter. You'll find me on LinkedIn and you can subscribe it that way, or find me through my website and subscribe to me it that way. At the moment, it is a LinkedIn newsletter, but spoiler alert, it is moving to my new website which hopefully I'll have out by the beginning of next year, and it'll be available on the website, and it'll be have a lot more goodies on the website. Now, what's the point of the newsletter? It's called TLDR, or Too Long Don't Read. You know, Business as Unusual, TLDR. It's really focused at leaders, and you're all leaders, even if you haven't got manager or leader in your title, it's irrelevant. You are all leaders. I pick a problem each week, whatever it is, and I come up with a simple to understand acronym that addresses how to overcome that problem with a whole load of sort of coaching style, try this to try and get you to practice it. Okay. The third thing that you can do is please, please, please reach out and connect to me. Again, connect to me on LinkedIn. And if you want anything, if you need anything, just ask.
So I'll put links to your website in the show notes. Similarly, your LinkedIn profile. Rick, I've had a great time. I am almost certainly going to invite you back because we have a lot to talk about. But we do, for good manners, need to bring things to an end today. For you at home, that does bring us to the end of another episode. Thanks for listening. And if you did enjoy the show, I would gently remind you to leave 5-star reviews. That's 5. Count them like the fingers on your hand. Reviews wherever you listen to podcasts, particularly if you're a Spotify reader. If you did enjoy the show, you will love the Personal Brand Business Roadmap. It's 100% free as a gift from me. 50 pages of everything you need to start, scale, or fix your expert business. You'll find a link in the show notes or visit amplifyme.agency/roadmap. Thanks again for listening at home. And Rick, thank you for your time. You have been awesome.
Thank you very, very much, Bob.